Monday, July 1st. Today in Europe, Germany has ordered the withdrawal of foreign diplomats from Norway, Belgium, Holland, and Luxembourg. In the Balkans, there are reports of clashes between Romanian troops and Russian troops in the ceded Bessarabian-Bukovinian area, and outbreaks between Romanian troops and Jews seeking to flee to Bessarabia. And in the West, despite the lull in warfare, there were more German air raids on Britain and more British raids on Germany. Now the news direct. Edwin Hartridge reporting from Berlin.
Good morning. This is Berlin. The Foreign Office has not yet confirmed the information this morning that a formal note was presented to the American Embassy stating that the United States government will have to remove its diplomatic missions from Oslo, The Hague in Holland, Brussels and Luxembourg. This means that American ministers and ambassadors in those countries, together with their immediate staffs, will have to be removed by July 15th, according to the terms of the German demand. There is no mention of the future status of the American diplomatic missions in Copenhagen and in Paris. The German note further explained that these affairs of Norway, Holland, Belgium, and Luxembourg would henceforth be handled from Berlin. This means that Ambassador Cudahy in Brussels, Minister George Gordon in The Hague, Madam Minister Mrs. J. Borden Harriman in Oslo, and Minister George Platt Walter in Luxembourg are now no longer accredited to the governments of these countries in which they were stationed. And then, this morning, the story is circulating in America that Germany has promised military aid to Romania against Russia, were categorically denied in a press conference at the Foreign Office this morning. Likewise, categorically denied were the stories which stated that Germany had advised Romania to maintain an attitude of peace with Russia until Germany was free in the West, that is, until she had successfully conquered both England and France. Then, as a stinger, the Foreign Office spokesman added this comment, quote, "The United States news agencies have published so many false reports about Balkan affairs that such affairs in the future should not concern them, nor do they understand them." Herr Hitler is continuing his tour of the battlefront. Yesterday, he left the headquarters of the German army to motor through sectors of the Maginot Line. He inspected the French fortifications at Mulhouse and in the Upper Alsace. Then yesterday, Dr. Goebbels, Minister of Propaganda, paid a visit to The Hague in the Netherlands. The French government has officially left its wartime seat at Bordeaux. Yesterday, a long stream of vehicles drove eastward to Clermont-Ferrand. This is in the lower central part of France and is in the unoccupied zone. The French government and the French Chamber of Deputies, together with the Senate, may not be located in the same city. So it is not yet known publicly whether the administrative or legislative branches of the government will be located in Clermont-Ferrand. City authorities have taken over the largest hotel there to be turned into government offices. And then, a few minutes ago, I've just been informed that the French government is now going to Vichy, which is a little to the northeast of Clermont-Ferrand. The second bombing of neutral Switzerland was played up in the German press this morning. The reports state that the bombing was done by British flyers early Sunday morning. Their bombs are reported to have fallen near the Wirwaldstättsee, a lake in central Switzerland. 12 bombs were dropped on the town of Altmark, according to reports. And the German explanation is that the British flyers confused this Swiss lake and town for an Italian lake and town. Today is the 50th anniversary of the peaceful acquisition of the island fortress of Heligoland by the Germans. This island in the North Sea was originally owned by the British. A trade was engineered between the two countries, with Germany giving Britain the island of Zanzibar and Vitulands in South Africa for Heligoland. At that time, the Germans thought that their government had made a bad deal, but in the following years, the island, which lies off the key ports of Hamburg and Bremen, became the number one coastal defense fortification. A trade treaty between Finland and Germany has been signed. Negotiations between the two governments started on June 1st. This is Edward Hartridge. I return you now to Columbia in New York.
That was Berlin. Here's the latest news from the Far East. Japan's new and more aggressive policy is being pushed by the Japanese army. Today, War Minister Hatta is reported to have handed Premier Yone a statement insisting upon a firmer stand toward what the army terms interference by outside nations in the Far East. Emphasis is placed on the importance of such a statement, since the Japanese army is responsible only to the emperor and not the cabinet. The British Crown Colony of Hong Kong continues to fear a Japanese attack. Today, American citizens, as well as British women and children, are planning to leave Hong Kong for Manila. Now the news, reported from the British capital by Edward R. Murrow. Go ahead, London.
This is London. Two German heavy bombers and a seaplane were brought down over the northeast of England about an hour ago. It was the first German daylight raid on England since hostilities ceased in France. The Royal Air Force issued the largest casualty roll of the 10-month-old war. It listed a total of 325 names, missing, wounded, and dead. The battle for Britain intensified in the air over the weekend as the Royal Air Force and the German Luftwaffe pounded each other's bases on both sides of the English Channel. German objectives in the Reich and in three occupied countries were the targets of the British heavy bombers. In France, an aerodrome on the coast was bombed. Similar treatment was given to airfields at three points in Holland, and attacks were delivered at railway yards in western Germany and in the great industrial city of Cologne. According to a British Air Ministry communique, less damaging attacks were made by German planes which crossed the English coast during the night and early today. In eastern England, attempts were made to bomb coastal aerodromes. In Wales and the west of England, where many children have been evacuated, high explosive and fire bombs were dropped without serious damage or casualties. In East Scotland, German incendiary bombs destroyed a vacant schoolhouse. The Midlands also suffered inconsequential bomb damage, says the Air Ministry. The Channel Island of Jersey, from which British troops were recently evacuated, was reconnoitered by a German plane, but no bombs were dropped. Apparently, British planes are conducting intensive reconnaissance over German-occupied Channel ports, the probable jumping-off ground for an invasion of Britain. What they saw can only be guessed at from the warnings of two British ministers last night. Said Neville Chamberlain, "We know the Nazis are even now contemplating preparation for an attempt to invade this country." And for Mr. Harold Nicholson, official of the Ministry of Information, the British public learned that within the next few days, perhaps even within the next few hours, an attack will be launched more terrible than any danger Britain has had to meet in the last 900 years. Scotland Yard continues its roundup of suspected fifth columnists. Over the weekend, an official of the London subway systems was arrested. The man who helped build the floodgates to protect the London subways from heavy bombs. There is a movement to drop the use of the phrase fifth columnist and return to the old-fashioned word traitor. This is the day when, according to many of the experts, Hitler will launch his invasion of England. But, as the doorman at my apartment house said a few minutes ago, here it is noon, and the Germans haven't arrived yet. While the Germans haven't yet started their aerial barrage against this country, they're continuing and intensifying their radio attack. Last night, a station calling itself the New British Broadcasting Station, operating from German-occupied territory, broadcast detailed instructions for the immediate evacuation of certain areas in England. The broadcast ended with the playing of God Save the King. But this little scheme to create panic didn't work. Most of the people who heard the broadcast, being rather careful and methodical Englishmen, just telephoned the authorities to check up on the accuracy of the instructions. But somehow, I don't believe that the German methods of creating panic and confusion are going to work in this country. The first few people to panic or run or get excited in any situation are always conspicuous. And the average Britisher, when he is with his fellow countrymen, will suffer much to avoid being conspicuous. London's newspapers this morning are all reduced in size. The paper controller has ordered that all popular daily papers shall hereafter be reduced to 6 full-size pages. For today, at least, that provides more than adequate space for the available news. The Daily Telegraph this morning voices a demand frequently heard in private conversations during the past few weeks. The government is urged to establish a single command for home defense. General Ironside controls only the army. Defense against air attack is no affair of his. That comes under the air marshal of the fighter command. The whole field of civil defense is left to the civil authorities. And it is believed that when the Germans launch their attack against this country, it will be made simultaneously from several different points, and the telegraph advocates a unified command to meet it. Reports from Bucharest, telling how the Russians captured a Romanian town by landing baby tanks from aeroplanes, give some support to the speculation that the Germans will employ similar methods in an attack against Britain. However, the landing of heavily laden transport planes in this country will be more difficult than it was in that flat land along the Danube. There are a number of natural obstacles, and the British have added certain artificial obstacles during the past few weeks. It is estimated that 1,300 Britons will be evacuated from Hong Kong during today. An official spokesman in Tokyo says he is unable to understand the Hong Kong reports of evacuation. The Japanese, he said, didn't request it. I return you now to Columbia in New York.
That was Edward R. Murrow reporting from London. In the United States, the new fiscal year begins, and the taxpaying public today begins footing the bill for national defense. And in Washington, Congress carries out its national defense studies after a week's rest. So for the latest news from the nation's capital, as reported by Albert Warner, we take you now to Washington.
Today, July 1st, begins a new fiscal year. And today we begin paying for the war, or at any rate, for national defense against a turn of the war in this direction. The new taxes are in effect on gasoline for your car, on theater and baseball game tickets, on cigarettes, beverages, and other articles and activities. We begin paying 10 to 50% more in taxes. The higher income levies are in effect, but they are not paid until next March. Thus, the troubled state of world affairs now hits everyone in the United States, even if he thought he was escaping earlier. Congress is back in session today, back to deal again with the effects of war in Europe and Asia. The Senate is yet to act on the House-approved measure to increase the size of the Navy by 70%. The Senate Military Affairs Committee on Wednesday will consider a bill for compulsory military training. Senate committees will consider tomorrow the controversial appointments of Henry L. Stimson and Frank Knox to be members of the cabinet. The administration will have a plan for economic action in behalf of the Western Hemisphere. The Joint Inter-American Cooperative Plan, confronted by many obstacles, may be delayed in favor of a domestic unilateral plan. A United States corporation would be empowered to buy up certain Latin American surpluses and hold them for deals with totalitarian Europe. Pilgrims to Philadelphia are returning to find that administration Democrats, for the most part, are conceding the Republicans nominated their strongest man and their most formidable candidate in the frank, aggressive Wendell Willkie. That doesn't mean they either like or admire him or regard him as invulnerable. But because they consider him to be a strong candidate who wants to center the campaign upon the New Deal itself, the inside New Dealers have become all the more insistent that Mr. Roosevelt should run again. Charles Edison, who left the cabinet to make the Democratic campaign for governor in New Jersey, said the Republicans nominated the strongest man available, and he thought it a good thing. I don't like to see a fight between a good man and a palooka, he said. So, there are others who think the same, that the president must run again. And yet, there are some Democrats who point out that Mr. Roosevelt is heart and soul interested in foreign affairs. And Mr. Willkie is not so very far apart from the administration's attitude toward the war in Europe. On that account, there is less need for the president to fight. And these people think Mr. Roosevelt would like to return to the role of country squire, to supervise his library, and to tend those Christmas trees which he has just planted on his Hyde Park estate. The nomination can go to the president without his moving a hand. In fact, the politicians, most of them, don't see how he could avoid being drafted. I understand that the man who would seem to be in the best position for the nomination if Mr. Roosevelt should decline it will even be out of the country when the Democratic Convention acts. Secretary of State Hull will be on his way to the Pan-American Conference at Havana. But a few weeks ago, the politicians scorned the idea that Willkie could be the Republican nominee. And now the Republicans say it's politically impossible for Mr. Roosevelt to avoid the nomination. It's just possible they may be surprised again. We return you now to New York.
And with these reports from Washington, we conclude this morning's report of national and international development. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.